He's got late goals against Southampton, Huddersfield, Bournemouth, all late goals, all scored by him. And if it wasn't for that, we would not be in the position we're in. I think, secondly, I don't think he played badly.
I'm of the view that people who perpetrate criminal damage against moving vehicles should be prosecuted, and if found guilty, should be imprisoned. What I'm not in favour of is deciding that we're going to turn this into an absolutely mega event that's got to dominate absolutely everything and colour what was a fantastic atmosphere from a handful of a few people. And that's what I'm being asked to do there, and that's what I'm not going to do.
You know when you have a boxing match and like two boxers match up well against each other? It's like, I feel like the way Liverpool play is perfectly suited to playing against Manchester City.
Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast, the podcast that gives real football fans a real voice on the sport that we love. My name is Jordan, your host, and before we get into the pod itself, just want to make a very brief mention and tribute to Ray Wilkins, who of course passed away last week, former QPR, Chelsea, Man United, Milan, Paris Saint-Germain and England midfielder. Died of a heart attack last week, as we all know. Very much loved figure in the game, and was a prominent voice and face in punditry and in the media as well. So from the Football Fans Podcast, we'd just like to pass on our condolences to the Ray Wilkins family and any of his friends and former colleagues. Okay, so this week on the podcast, we have got a very juicy and ram-packed pod for you guys today. I'm joined by Manchester City fan Nigel. How are you doing, Nigel?
I'm well. Very well, thank
you. Good?
You. Yeah, really good. Yeah.
Sprightly after two losses, but we'll get into that later on. But I like how you're sprightly and you're buzzing.
Headlines around the world. City lose two games and it's headlines around the world.
But you love that.
Bring it on.
Bring it on. Good. I like that. Fighting talk. Bring it on. I love it. I'm also joined by a United fan, Joshua. Josh, what are you saying?
I'm doing very well.
You good?
Yeah. Had a nice relaxing week. Missus was away, so you know. Watched all the football I wanted, so it's great.
Happy days.
Happy days.
Perfect. We will be speaking to Neil from the Anfield Wrap a little bit later on as we kind of do talk a little bit about the Champions League and the tie between Liverpool and Manchester City. Before we get into our drive-bys, just mention to check out our next shootout, which will be up later this week, where we spoke to a Man United legend, one of the greatest Premier League strikers of all time, and also a treble winner. He'll be on the Football Fans Podcast, the shootout, later this week. And he had this to say to me earlier today.
And I was on about this the other day to someone, and I said, you know, I've got 186 goals, yeah, and one penalty. Now, if this was someone else, they'd be clamoring about that. They'd be talking about, oh, unbelievable. Oh, well, I mean, and it's one of those ones, you know. When you end up passing away, people want to talk about how good a goal scorer he was and it was this and that. Why do people do that when someone's no longer here?
Right, let's get into some drive-bys now, gentlemen. Let's start with you, Nigel. Christian Benteke, do you think Crystal Palace are doing the right thing and have done the right thing by sticking with him for as long as they have? Or should they, considering the amount of misses he's had this season, have thrown an under-23 striker in by now?
I think they're limited in their options, and I think he's got a proven track record. Certainly when we played Crystal Palace, it's one of the few games we actually didn't win this season, of course. We drew at their place. So I think that they have probably got limited options. I don't know. I'm no expert in terms of what their bench looks like, in terms of if they've got any youngsters coming through. But
they've got a good youth academy, and they always have done.
But I don't know any of the names who might well be able to take that place. I suppose, you know, At the end of the day, it's going to be their decision, isn't it? But no, for me, I'd stick with him and see him through. He's a proven striker, scores goals, and they should stick with him, in my view.
I think he'll come good. Okay. Josh, for you, is it a problem that Daniel Levy earns more than the players?
It's actually, when I first heard how much he earned, it shocked me. Obviously, as a United fan, he earned two or three times more than his certain salary than Ed Woodward. So that kind of was like, whoa, what's going on there? However, I didn't realise, or I had forgotten, that he owns 25% of Spurs, right? And so therefore he's an owner. So you can't look at it as just he's just a
manager,
a chairman or an exec. He actually owns a club. So I don't think it's a problem.
Okay, cool. I was going to discuss, when I was planning the pod the latter part of last week, I wanted to discuss Brighton and Huddersfield, because that was going to be a crucial game in terms of who may go down and who may stay up. But I watched the game, and the 1-1 result, it was dry. So we're going to skip past what was meant to be one of the key games in the weekend. let's get to the key game of the week, which was for City fans and the ones to my right, the derby. I've got two Manchester fans in the house today. Before we get into the actual two games that have been played, Nigel, against Liverpool and against United, just want to get your view on, out of the two games, which for you was the more important?
For me personally, and I guess I'm in the minority of City fans when I say this, was absolutely the Champions League.
Go on.
Because by November, December, the league was nailed on.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, I was really, really comfortable hearing that we were going to be playing a weakened side. Pep said he flagged that up. Vincent Kompany in the press conference also said that a weakened side is what we're going for, and it's what we did in the mm-hmm. end. It wasn't exactly 11 changes, but you know, it was weaker. De Bruyne didn't start. Kyle Walker didn't start. Aguero didn't start, albeit him coming back from injury. So from my point of view, we absolutely did the right thing in terms of paying it. And at half time, I was thinking, yeah, correct decision, because we've got to give ourselves a fighting chance against Liverpool in the second leg on Tuesday this week. So for me, not disappointed that we played a weakened side, and the priority absolutely for me was the league, Champions League game.
So here's the thing for me, Nigel. The reason why I don't agree, for two reasons. Primarily, one, because I hate it when my manager, my club, not everyone does it, but my manager does it, they plan for the game after the game. I don't like it when they have that's the big game next week. I'm very big on focus on the game in hand. One, because if you'd have beaten United, the momentum and the vibe going into that Liverpool game second leg might have actually been, well, it would have been a positive for you. And also as well, I just think to myself, that was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to beat the red half of the City, to do something they've never done. For 20-odd years, you've had to endure them pointing their fingers down on you, laughing at you as you've been relegated through multiple divisions. This was your moment. 50 years from now, people will remember City won the league against United, right, playing them.
Let's get one thing straight. When you say the red half of the City,
yeah,
they are from outside the City.
Okay.
let's just be clear. You know, they're from Stretford.
From
the borough of Trafford. So there is only one team who play
in Manchester. Okay,
exactly.
Fair.
So
okay.
Let's clear that one
let's
up.
Let's get facts right first.
Facts,
okay.
Please. You know, I know it's difficult, and certainly Josh won't know because he's probably never been, listen to his accent, he's probably never been to Manchester in his life.
Oh, here we go.
So I don't think it's about planning the next game. It's, you know, they're fit guys, we know that, but you know, can they play three massive games in a matter of just over a week? And managers will rest players, they will rotate their squad. It's a big squad, he's got some stars within that squad, so he will need to rotate it. I have no issue. In fact, I was quite keen for him to actually play some of the kids, play a couple of the women men in the side. yeah, bring a couple of girls in. We've got a fantastic women's side at City, which they don't have. They've just decided to start one now, you know, it's ridiculous. We've got the setup. Let's have a 9-year-old in there, let's have a couple of the girls in there,
mix it up a bit,
yes, to give a few people a debut. But look, listen, being serious, I was not unhappy, genuinely. Yes, of course, I would have loved to have battered them. I hate them with a passion. Yeah, always have done. Never even call them by their name. I blame my father for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're Stretford as far as I'm concerned. They're not Manchester anything. So to beat them, absolutely. Let's just muller them. And I was there, and at half time, the feeling we had, because it wasn't just the fact it was 2-0, we played them off the park. It was men against boys, and the feeling was amazing. So, you know, we could easily, if Raheem Sterling had sort of taken those three or four chances, we could have been, and joking apart, we could have been 5 or 6.
Should have been 5 up, yeah.
We could easily have been. So, and that's with a weakened side. So he could have got it absolutely spot on.
Josh, what happened at halftime? Because, as you know, I have been very harsh on Mourinho this season.
Yeah.
Not his biggest fan. And I think he's a big part of the reason why you are 12, 13, whatever points it is behind Manchester City.
13 now.
13 now, okay. But fair play to him. I'm a fair man. If you're going to batter him when things go wrong, I've got to give him credit when things go right. What do you think changed in that second half? Because as Nigel says, you guys were awful in that first half and you were brilliant in the second half. Was it tactical or was it just men saying, this is embarrassing, fix up?
There were some small tactical elements, but I don't think tactics were the main reason. And I don't think it's solely United's change which was the reason for that comeback either. I think there's a combination of things they have to look at. City thought they won the game.
So you think at half time,
City came out. They came out in the second half. They thought they already won the game. They thought the league was wrapped up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they were expecting United to come out and challenge them. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes when, and it was only like a 5-10 minute spell where we scored two goals, mm-hmm. or three even in 12 minutes or something like that.
I think it was like 13 minutes, yeah.
So, you know, there's not a lot of time to consolidate and take that in and to react. Mm. I think we scored two very quick goals. Pogba scored two very quick goals. It shell-shocked them. I actually think that they played really well after the third goal, and they were a bit unlucky not to get an equaliser. Mm. What happened in the dressing room? Chris Smalling said something about Jose Mourinho saying you don't want to look like clowns. Mm. You don't want you don't want City to be celebrating the winning the league in front of you guys. To be honest, personally, I always take some of those comments that come out after games with a lot of scepticism. Mm. It seems to me like in the first half, the way we were trying to play was to not concede, mm. rather than to try and win the game. And I feel like probably at halftime, Jose Mourinho probably just decided, well, the game's lost, you guys go do what you want. And mm. United came out and played football.
Yeah.
And tried to, it's similar to what happened at Old Trafford when we conceded a goal against City, and then decided to play football, and we got an equaliser. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that really annoys me about the United team this season is that in a lot of the bigger games they don't attempt to play football, which is so anti-United, mm. And it's very frustrating as a fan. Coming back to a few things Nigel said, it's very interesting that to hear, like, and I didn't really realise this as well, to hear City fans how much they hate United, mm. and how much that game was like so important for them, mm-hmm. because obviously as a United, I guess, like, some of my main rivals would have been Liverpool, mm. Arsenal, mm. to a certain, but you haven't really seen City as like main rivals, mm. until recently, and even then it's still, you know, the Liverpool game is still bigger, the Arsenal game is still bigger, mm-hmm. And it's like, I was just sitting there thinking, well, you guys have won the league. And there was like pictures of fans like crying.
It did look a little bit dramatic, didn't it?
I was like,
a bit over the top. Yeah,
but you guys have won the league. You've played the best football.
But don't you get it? That was their moment. That was the crowning moment on a great season.
To me, what I would say is that it kind of looks a bit small time to me.
Okay.
It's like, you guys are really not a big club yet. But it's fair, they are new.
So. You could argue, Josh, yeah. small time is you celebrating like you've won the European Cup by stopping us from winning.
Celebrations were a little bit over the top.
I agree. That's Mourinho for you, though, isn't it? Yeah. They celebrated the Europa League like they won the treble or something.
Yeah.
But personally, I said last week before the game, I had very little interest in the game.
You did.
Very little interest in the game whatsoever. I didn't even expect us to win, but... We did.
So. Raheem Sterling, what's been the reaction to his performance? Because I've not been a big fan of his, but I did this year. I was turning. I was like, this guy's improved. Maybe I've been a bit hard on him, but it's games like that make me doubt him again and think you've got to score at least one. I'm being nice. At least one of those three chances.
Well, let's get this into perspective here. Raheem Sterling has scored over 21 goals, I think, this season for City. And he's actually got us, you could argue, before we get onto the misses, he has got us into the position that we're in. He's got late goals against Southampton, Huddersfield, Bournemouth, all late goals, mm. all scored by him. And if it wasn't for that, we would not be in the position we're in. Mm-hmm. I think, secondly, I don't think he played badly. That first half, he got himself into positions. He caused a lot of trouble for the Stretford defence. He was absolutely awesome. And yeah, he missed three gilt-edged chances. I don't think he is the natural striker that Aguero is, that maybe Harry Kane is either. He's a winger. Mm-hmm. So I think there's lots of things in the mix here.
Yeah.
Should he have scored those shots? Yeah, of course. We're disappointed, frustrated. Mm-hmm. But actually, I think there will be some City fans, I'm sure, saying, yeah, it's his fault if it's only for that. For me, the goals he scored, the season he's had, the improvement that he's made under Pep.
Yeah.
You know, Pep's got to take credit for that, but Raheem's got to take credit for that. He's like, he came back from the Euros, got slated by everybody, he's booed at every ground he goes to, not sure why. Mm-hmm. He could be a fantastic resource for England in the World Cup. So, you know, I think he's had his best season for a long time. And as you say, he's got stuff in the bank. For me, it's okay, Raheem. You've won us the league, my friend.
How are you? Are you concerned about the defence? We're going to talk about the Liverpool two legs with Neil when he comes on in just a little bit. But is it a concern that maybe your defence isn't as good as maybe you thought it was? Or are they just two bad games?
Well, let's start at the back. So from a goalkeeping point of view, we've made a step up from Bravo from last season to Edison, who I think is brilliant. Mm-hmm. I think as far as the back four are concerned, Mendy, who we've seen, what, 3.5 games from him, was meant. I saw him in Monaco. He was absolutely awesome. We all said we must have him. We bought him. We were excited. He played 3.5 games. He should be back. Hopefully he might play one or two games before the end of the season. Mm-hmm. Walker is a fantastic upgrade at right back as well. And then in the middle, Vincent Kompany's had his injuries. Laporte, we haven't seen enough of him yet. Otamendi, the last couple of games, he's been sliding in, spending time on his arse, which worries us a little bit. But I think that the way Pep plays the game and the way City are playing the game is, you score two or three, we'll always score four or five. That's the way that we play the game.
Well, I want to ask, do you think he needs a plan B? Because my thinking has always been, when you have the best team in the league, or definitely in Europe, when you've got the best team around, you don't have to change for anybody. Everyone's got to change for you.
Exactly.
But we saw that when it goes badly wrong, it goes really badly wrong for City. Are you concerned that there doesn't seem to be a second way of playing when things aren't going right?
No.
You think you're winning more than you won't, so
Jordan,
overall you'd
be fine. We are 13 points ahead in the Premier League. We've already got one trophy. Okay, it's only the Carabao Cup, but plenty of teams around the country would be delighted to have that. Not looking at anybody in particular.
I was going to say, just so you look to me right there. To say,
I hate Mourinho.
Yeah, so we've won the Carabao Cup. We are going to win the Premier League. We may well go on and progress in the Champions League, which we're going to come on to, I'm sure, at some point.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not out of that yet. So no, I don't think we should, because I think that football, I think we've got people around the country now, City are their second favourite team now. People like to watch City play, the way that people are talking about the way we play football. He's ripping up the way football's played.
They do.
That goal, you know, that footballing goalkeeper, they're keeping possession. It scares me shitless sometimes when we're playing the ball at the back, when the centre, the two centre forwards are sort of coming down on them.
But nine times out of ten, it works.
And we might make the odd mistake, sure. But I think the positive is that attacking football, the pressing, the pace, the pass, the 45-metre pass from De Bruyne, Sane, you know, Aguero, who's going to score 200 goals for City. There are too many good things going on. And teams like that, if they are vulnerable at the back, they're vulnerable at the back. Mm. Sure, we have got some frailties. Sure, but we'll always score more than them. And we've lost four games. Let's get this into perspective here. We've lost four games this season.
No, indeed.
All is not wrong, Jordan.
No.
Don't worry yourself.
No, I'm not worried.
I think you've got a bit of a worried look on your face.
I'm just asking questions. Josh, Paul Pogba.
Yeah.
Is that the role that he should be assuming going forward? That kind of, dare I say, that kind of Frank Lampard-esque arriving late.
There we go.
I'm just saying, arriving late into the box, being a physical force, he's a good finisher and a presence. Or do you think that, is that what changed? He spent most of his time in the final third, as opposed to getting the ball from his back four and losing the ball.
I think... The thing about Paul, I have this conversation a lot of times with United fans and non-United fans about Paul Pogba. One of the things that people need to take a step back and look at United's attackers as a whole and see which ones are performing and which ones are not. Mm-hmm. The majority of Man United attackers are not performing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a Paul Pogba issue, it's a United attacking issue. And it's down to the mentality and the way that they play football. So, our attacking players don't... Paul Pogba, for instance, is one player that you could play in multiple different roles in central midfield, right? He can play...
But can you?
No, I'm saying he can, right? So he can play as a deep-line playmaker. He can play as an attacking midfielder who bombs into the box and gets forward and gets goals. He can play in between that, right? But the problem is that he's being asked to do all of them at the same time. Mourinho's got this concept of box-to-box midfielder, which is great, but you don't ask your box-to-box midfielder to be your top assister as well. You need other attacking players to be able to make the creative passes so that he can go forward and bomb forward and get into the box and get on the end of them, which is great because Sanchez did that against City, right? Mm. But the problem's been most of the season that he's the one making the passes and also being asked to make the runs. Mm. And then also being asked to track all the way back and make sliding tackles mm-hmm. and chase midfielders. Mm. He can't play all of those roles in midfield. And so there's a problem with our tactical setup in terms of how you get the best out of Paul Pogba, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
He played his best football in United games, in my opinion, when he plays a little bit more reserved and deeper and picks passes.
Mm-hmm.
But that, again, means that our attacking players need to be allowed to have the freedom to make runs and not always be thinking about, if I don't track this guy back, like Martial on left wing, if he doesn't track back, he's going to get an airfall.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So he's playing with, like, he's playing in his attacking position in a strange way. He's thinking more about, I need to track the right winger or the right back, than I need to get forward and put these guys under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a mentality thing within the way you play. This is kind of what I said about the City game, is what changed at halftime was just our mentality. We decided to attack. We decided to play attacking football.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't decide to play not to concede. And I think against City as well, if you look in the Premier League or you look the games that they've played, Wigan, Liverpool, most of the teams that have had success against City are the ones that don't sit back.
They put it on them.
Not necessarily that you go out and attack and go gung-ho, but you cannot allow City to have the ball in midfield, because that's what they want. They want to control the possession.
Mm.
They want to be able to pull your midfield and your defence around until they find gaps. Mm-hmm. And they have the players with enough quality. If you make one mistake in your positioning, Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva is going to pick that pass and you're dead. So you can't do that against City. You need to... Liverpool have probably the best game plan against them because they have the guys in midfield who are just going to harry them and not give them any time on the ball.
Well, how concerning do you think your win over City will be for them going forward in this next second leg tie?
One thing I have is a kind of reservation about City is maybe their mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And that might seem quite strange to say about a team which is like 13 points clear in the league. But when they came to Old Trafford, and I went to that game and watched that game, when they came to Old Trafford, I wasn't impressed with them. I felt like they dominated the game. I felt we were so poor. And we allowed them to just have the ball, but I didn't think they played very well, and I felt like they were a little bit like, even Pep changed his tactics. He took off a striker and put a defender on. It just didn't seem like City. They were very much a bit more pragmatic. They didn't play the free flowing attacking football that we're used to. And they were, against Liverpool as well, I felt like they started the game
hesitant.
Yeah, it's like in some big games, and you've had that, you know, we've had previous managers with City, they look stunning throughout the season, and then they get to the Champions League knockout stages against a team, and then they kind of fall apart a little bit.
Mm.
So I feel like they still need to get to the play. Maybe they need to win the Premier League, and then they'll really start believing, and they need to win the Champions League, and then the players will start having that confidence. And so I feel like in big games, sometimes the players lack a little bit of confidence.
Okay,
we need to win the Premier. We will win the Premier League 3 times in 7 years this season.
Well,
what are you talking about?
I'm talking about players like Sterling, players like Sané.
They need that winning mentality. Yeah. They need to kind of cross the line.
I feel like you have a core like Aguero,
Company, Silva.
Yeah, but then not a lot of the players are quite new. I think Pep's bought like 13 players.
There's a lot of players in there. So. Let's move it forward now.
Mourinho's not bought anybody, has he? They've all just appeared. They're just kind of. And Pogba was a free bargain, free transfer, wasn't he, Pogba?
Sniff of the season.
What's going on here?
Let's move it forward now to the second leg between Manchester City and Liverpool. And to do so, I want to bring in Neil from the Anfield Wrap. Neil, what are you saying, man?
I'm saying that if you think Vincent Kompany is the one you're going to look after. I've seen him play twice now in the last 2 games, and he's lost his head both occasions. His head's absolutely fallen off like no one.
Well, hang on a minute. Before we get to Vincent Kompany...
No, let's body Vincent Kompany for a bit. It's unbelievable that Guardiola's brought him in the way he has to say, you know what, we don't want our heads falling off when we play the mighty Liverpool when they harry us and close us down. And then his head absolutely went first half. He needed half time more than any player on the pitch. His last 20 against Man United was a downright disgrace.
Well, hang on, before we get to personnel.
I very much look forward, Neil, to seeing Vincent Kompany lift his 7th trophy in the time he's been at the mighty Manchester City. I look forward to it enormously. It may well be the 8th with the Champions League.
So Neil, just before we continue, so you know who you're talking to, we have a Manchester City fan, Nigel, and I have a Man United fan, Joshua, here as well. Neil, tactically, what do you think Klopp has over Pep? Because his record over Pep is really, really good. That even precedes their time in the Premier League. What do you see in these games against Manchester City that you think gives him the edge over Pep? Is he in his head?
I don't know if he's got the edge over Guardiola, but you know, we've lost 5-0 to Man City this season. It's worth pointing that out. So you know, first and foremost, let's keep it in perspective. What I think Klopp's good at, Klopp very much has an order and a structure to what he does, but he simultaneously encourages at times in games some chaos. Guardiola is very much all about control. Everything they do is about control. And I don't think that the City players are that good when a game goes mad. And I think you've seen that throughout this season now. When something unorthodox or unlikely happens, I think there's been a number of times City haven't dealt with it all that well. And I think that that's something which is difficult for Pep to deal with and for those players to deal with. And I thought, you know, for instance, I thought City started brilliantly around field for 9 minutes. I was watching them smother us. They were closing down passing lanes. The shape was phenomenal. 15 minutes later, heads have absolutely gone. Gundogan is acting like, well, I don't want to play it anymore. I'm on the right, and what am I doing here? What's going on there? Silva's running channels for him, doing doggies, running his legs into the ground. He's 32 years old. He doesn't want to be doing that. And City just didn't cope particularly well with the game becoming chaotic. And that's something which, as I say, I think Klopp's good at making it chaotic. He's good at saying, right, you're not going to get to settle. You're not going to get to relax. We're going to make your life a living hell. And what are you going to do about it? And I think that that's something which Guardiola's players in general, when they were at Bayern Munich, now, I think that's something that they very much struggle to cope with. And I think that the next thing that happens there, it's interesting, the knock of belief, which I think you were talking about a minute ago. It's easy to believe if you've got Leo Messi, because you know you've got the best player who's ever played the game, by some distance probably. And you can relax then. It's not to say that they haven't got brilliant, brilliant players now. They have, and it's not to say all of his success relies upon Messi. That's clearly not true. This team's going to win the Premier League next weekend or the weekend after. That'd be a nonsensical thing to say. But having faith in difficult moments, well, it helps massively if you've got someone who you know can just turn something into nothing at the drop of a hat.
Nigel, what was your reading of Pep not starting Sterling in that first leg?
It's cowardly.
It felt to me like he bottled it, it's probably the wrong phrase, but it felt to me like he wanted to try and dominate the ball with another passing midfielder in there.
I think there's two reasons. I think the first one is, yes, he did change his tactics. We'd always gone with Fernandinho just in that holding role. He chose to go with Gundogan as well to have the two of them in there to try and sort of fill that space. I think the other reason is that for all the reasons we will understand, Raheem Sterling gets horrendous abuse at Anfield and has every time he's gone back there and hasn't actually performed any of those games. So I guess it was a double-edged sword. I guess it was a bit of both in that situation. But it didn't work, did it? Of course, it meant that De Bruyne and Silva didn't have the space that they would normally have. And it kind of backfired a bit. He obviously changed it once we went 3-0 down and we performed slightly better when that happened. But I guess it was those two reasons, and just to protect him in a way, really.
But does he have to get over that? He's a £50 million player. He made a kick. He kicked up a fuss about leaving Liverpool to go to Manchester City, which I backed him and defended him for. But if you're going to do that, you've got to see it through, and you've got to make sure that when you make your move, you can go back there and push out your chest and perform. He can't always not play at Anfield just because he's scared the guys are going to boo him. He's got to get past that.
I'm sure he's as disappointed as you and I am about his performances there. But as we've said earlier on, his performances this season, I think he has absolutely, he gets booed everywhere. And I think his performances this season have proved a lot of people wrong.
Sterling's a brilliant player.
He's a different player from just a season ago. I think he and Pep have done a fantastic job. He's done really, really well. He struggles at Anfield for whatever reason. He does.
He's a brilliant player, but I just want to come on this Gundogan thing. He was playing him right mid, you know, and that to me was, you know, he was playing him right mid with a bit of license to tuck in a tiny little bit, but he was playing him right mid, and it was the idea Walker was going to come on the outside, and it was a bit of a lopsided thing. So then Laporta plays left back, but it's a bit left centre back, and he's going to deal with Salah like a left sided centre half. But to me, that was again, if it's not working all of a sudden and you're looking at the manager, the gaffer, the fella who's brought you to the party playing a certain way, and then you go, well, hang on, gaffer, we're 2-3-0 down at Anfield here. Well, we've beaten these 5-0 and the 4-3 was close. They just got on top of us for 10-15 minutes.
Yep.
So why are we compromising? We're the best team in the country. They're not.
I found that weird as well. I want to come on, Josh, now to the, and I want to get Neil's view on this as well, but I want to get your view first of all on what happened leading up to the game with the bus. and there's footage online of seeing of what happened as the city bus came through the streets of Liverpool. Do you think, Josh, that that some way spooked the Man City players? Because I've seen the in bus pictures footage, and it looked messy. It looked like they were going into hell, literally with the red mist. It looked like they were going into somewhere really bad.
I don't think it just spooked the players. I think it spooked Pep.
You think?
Yeah. There's footage of Pep walking into the stadium. Walking into the towards the dressing room, and he's mouthing off about that incident.
Yeah,
I think it got to him as well.
You think?
And if he's that's it with him going into the dressing room, then he's and whatever he's saying, then he's bringing that aura into the dressing room. Probably translated over to the players.
Mm-hmm.
One of the interesting things I remembered was when United played West Ham when
we lost
that game as well.
Yeah,
and I feel like the similar thing happened. Mm. I feel like the players. They were a little bit shell shocked. They let themselves become intimidated, and yeah, I think that probably affected the players as well.
And does that kind of come back to your earlier point about mentality, and it could be a possible sign of weakness?
I don't want to call the city squad weak mentally because they've got a lot of strong characters in their side, but it just seems to me that it's something that I've seen in the Champions League. The Champions League, when they get to the last stages, you think they're playing really well. They seem to collapse. And when they came to Old Trafford, they didn't play their usual football. Even though they won the game, we were terrible. When they went to Anfield again in the Champions League, it seems like they why did they leave Sterling? Okay, maybe he doesn't play well at Anfield, but why did they have to go with this lopsided back three? And then
it was weird. It was
a bit strange.
Neil, I'm sure you'll condemn all of the anyone that did throw bottles and coins, whatever, at the bus because it was criminal. It was actually, you know, what they did was disgusting. But do you feel that is part of what scares a lot of teams on those midweek European nights at Anfield? It's that intimidation that the Liverpool fans bring. If you're going to come to our home here at Anfield, we're going to put it on you even before you get in the stadium. And is there a fine line between being intimidating and obviously, well, being criminal?
Well, the criminal acts. So the criminal acts should be dealt with by the criminal authority. I don't see any reason for UEFA to even be involved, to be honest with you. The police are present, they're there. The police have got tons and tons of intelligence around it, so it should just be prosecuted in the courts as any other criminal act are, first and foremost. I think what intimidated Manchester City was going 1-0 down, and that crowd absolutely getting up. They thought they were there to quieten the crowd. They thought they were doing a bit of a job on that. And I think that what actually does for them, and as I said before, they started well for 9 minutes, and then Liverpool scored out of nothing. And I think there's something terrifying about a team that can score out of nothing. I used to be terrified of Ferguson's United, and the reason why is because they can score out of nothing. And nothing makes your head go like that. Like that feeling like this almost isn't fair. We can play really, really well, and we can do our manager's game plan, but they've just scored.
I think nothing
gets in your head like that. And then the atmosphere was absolutely unbelievable. I mean, it really was. And it was intimidating. It was horrible to play in. I wouldn't have wanted to play in it if I was a Man City player. But the other thing that it also does, though, is it keeps the Liverpool players honest.
Mm.
Everyone talks about the atmosphere like it's a negative. I've never seen Liverpool players as switched on in terms of shutting people down. Think about that second goal for a second. Milner comes right the way across to win that ball. He's just done something pretty poor. But he snaps into that tackle. Oxlade-Chamberlain's the sharpest man on the pitch. He looks up, he gets it out under his feet, he's 20 yards out and he bangs it in.
Mm.
But that's all because everyone's sharp and on it. And they're sharp and on it because there's 50,000 lunatics screaming at them and you don't want to disappoint them.
Mm.
So it's a double-edged sword, that. And I think it's a real shame that a lot of what was, I think, the brilliance of a football crowd has been overshadowed by, as I say, acts that I don't think should be particularly discussed in the context because the criminal act, which can be dealt with by a criminal court. Instead, let's talk about what actually happened on the pitch and what happened from the stands, which was that crowd made 3-4% of difference to Liverpool and maybe -3 or -4 to Manchester City.
That was
what made the difference.
Well, I bring it up because I personally think that the two are interlinked. I think what happened outside does play a role, what happened on the pitch. I think that they need to look into that, because I think that things obviously went too far, but I understand how it can work in your side's favour.
It would have looked like going into hell, as you phrased it.
but it did, though, because if you see the smoke and the red, the bus driver couldn't see where he was driving. He could have run someone over.
Smoke's fine, isn't it?
If you can't see where you're driving.
Oh, no, he's got a path in front of him. He'll be fine. If he needs to, he can get Colin McRae's rally driver next to him or whatever it's called. Someone can help him out with that. We can just crack on there and just say, you know, so if there's an issue with the window being broken, then as I say, let's have it looked into. But the idea that the streets are going to be thronged, the streets are going to be thronged. You're coming into our gaff. This is the way in which it goes. What didn't help was Manchester City were talking about this 3 weeks ago. Why? Why were they talking about this 3 weeks ago?
What, the entrance into the game?
That's
why, because they were concerned that what happened might happen.
They were talking about 3 weeks ago, because it was in their minds, this idea of what it is to go to Anfield. That had been far, far better. But Alex Ferguson had been talking about it 3 weeks ago. Absolutely not. He'd have gone, what we're going to do? We're going to get in that ground and we're going to play a game of football. And that's the beginning, middle and end of the matter. And to be fair to the Man City players, they've all stood up and been counted afterwards and said, it's made no difference to us. What happened on the pitch made a difference to us.
Go on, Nigel.
Neil, I've been quiet here, listening very carefully to what you said. And I think you completely underplayed what was a very, very serious situation. And I think it's not the Manchester City players who were talking about it for 3 weeks. It was the Liverpool fans on social media talking about it for 3 weeks, saying exactly and precisely what they were going to do to Manchester City as they entered the stadium, which is why the police making the coach be diverted and then publicising the route was a very foolish thing to do. And the amount of... It's not the odd smash on... I forget what you say now, but the odd broken window. It was... wanton violence of bottles and cans.
Come on, Neil.
It
was
missiles.
Pretty bad, Neil.
It was bad, it was violent, and it should be condemned. It was disgraceful, and I'm disappointed. Can I just finish, Neil? And I'm really... And I appreciate it's a handful of Liverpool fans. It's not every Liverpool fan. But I think you should have the grace to sit there and say how dreadful it was, how terrible it was, and you should condemn it.
Go on, Neil.
Condemn it.
Go on, Neil.
I think that the people who've carried out these acts should be prosecuted and imprisoned. Is that condemnation enough?
No, it's not. We all know they should. Of course they should. I'm asking you to condemn it and say how disgusting it was and how deliberate acts of violence like that against a moving coach with people inside, whoever they are, should be condemned. And you haven't, and you continue not to do that. All you're saying is the police should deal with it, and it's nothing to do with UEFA. I couldn't disagree with you more strongly, my friend.
Well, I very much am of the view that things that don't happen in football grounds and don't happen in football stadia should be dealt with by the civil authorities first and foremost. They shouldn't be dealt with by anything else. And all the way through this has been this. Go on, unless...
I'll say, and let's hope it does, because I thought it was really, really bad. I think I'm actually jealous of the atmosphere that you guys create at Anfield, and my club, Arsenal, is dead. So I'm really jealous of what you guys do. I think on that occasion, it definitely went well too far. Let's get back to football.
I want to be quite clear on this. Criminal damage is going too far. So, the issue that we've got here is that it seems to be some sort of issue of semantics. I'm of the view that people who perpetrate criminal damage against moving vehicles should be prosecuted and, if found guilty, should be imprisoned. What I'm not in favour of is deciding that we're going to turn this into an absolutely mega event that's got to dominate absolutely everything and colour what was a fantastic atmosphere from a handful of a few people. Mm. And that's what I'm being asked to do there, and that's what I'm not going to do. And also what I'm not going to do is then want action to be taken against a football club, which is what happens if you UEFA gets involved and tars an entire football club and all of those people when, in your own words, it's a handful. Very, very different things. And what I'd like to see is that handful of people who you're referring to be prosecuted, and if found guilty in a court, which they should be able to do, given all the everything that's out there, all the evidence that's out there, then they're dealt with by that court, and then that is dealt with. The idea that we tarnish an entire football club set of supporters because of the acts of a handful surely is something that we've left in the 1980s.
Let's move on. Nigel, KDB or Salah? It's really hotting up now for Player of the Year. KDB had a really bad game on Wednesday. Salah's just been scoring for fun. He got injured, obviously. is it obvious you're gonna go with KDB, or do you think Salah has overtaken him from what was a phenomenal start to the season?
I mean, Salah has had a phenomenal season in a brilliant front three for Liverpool. They've been awesome. Let's have a situation where Liverpool end the season without, let's just say for a moment, they don't manage to get passes in the second leg, and they don't win the Champions League, and they end up by winning nothing. If City go on to win the Premier League, maybe win the Champions League as well, we might come on to that, I don't know, and already won the Carabao Cup, I think the best player in the best team is the sort of person who I think should be winning the player of the year. The fact he's had a couple of off games, you know, Salah's has had a few games where he's not scored goals So it's just the fact it's happened recently. So for me, it would be De Bruyne for that reason, because he's the best player in the best team that season. And I think the problem is, of course, and it happens, I did look at the statistics, I didn't bring them with me, but very often it's the goal scorers, of course, who win it. Not exclusively. Mm. We've had Pat Jennings won it 1 year as a goalkeeper. So, you know, we've got a situation where goal scorers tend to get the headlines, tend to get the plaudits, tend to win these awards more often. In this situation, I just think that the influence that Kevin De Bruyne has had on the... And everybody's talking, we're the best team in Europe, potentially the best team on the planet. Then, for me, it would be Kevin De Bruyne for those reasons. But Salah's been awesome. And those front three, for Liverpool, as I said, have been absolutely brilliant this year.
I won't ask you that question, Josh, but I will ask you, who do you think is more important, that Liverpool attack, Salah or Firmino?
Oh, I'll go with Salah.
Mm-hmm.
I think Firmino is brilliant. I think he's an absolutely fantastic player. Very underrated. Does a lot of dirty work for the Liverpool front three in terms of like their pressing. He's very aggressive in that. But I just think 37, 38 goals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't replace that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't replace that.
It's hard to come.
You can't replace that. That's phenomenal.
Neil, I'm going to ask you both questions. Just briefly, who do you think is more important out of Salah and Firmino, and who gets your vote for Player of the Year?
Well, they've already done Player of the Year because he voted for it in January or something like that.
Yeah, so silly.
I'd give it to Kev De Bruyne because he's a massive red. Most of the Reds, Kev De Bruyne, absolutely loves them, and I'm hoping we have a cheeky 120 million offer in the summer. And because I mean, he's brilliant for Manchester City, but he'd die for Liverpool. Firmino or Salah is such a nightmarish choice, and that Salah sticks the ball in the back of the net all the time. But Firmino really does glue it all up. So, you know, if we still had Coutinho, I'd be sitting there and I'd say, you know what, you can just go with last season's front three, Coutinho, Firmino and Mane. But as we sold Coutinho, then you probably do have to err on the side of the lad who scores all of those goals, so you go with Salah.
Okay. Silva gets my vote, personally, Player of the Year, but that's just me. Let's
Wait, is that David Silva?
David Silva gets my vote, but anyway. Let's just finally wrap up with the actual second leg now. Neil, is this over? And if it's not, how do you progress to the semi-final?
We score two goals. We've got 90 minutes to score two goals. If we score two, they've got to score six. And if they score six, all the best of them. They're a brilliant team.
Do you come out and try and get that first goal early, to dead it early? Or are you patient, give it the first half an hour, see what they bring, and then go from there?
I think we haven't got a ton of options because of the strength of the squad in general, but also the injuries that we've got. I think we will play our way. The way City go about it dictates the game for me. If I was being Manchester City, I would be playing for 0-0 at half time, and I'd be trying to turn this into a 30-minute game. And I'd be looking to just run Liverpool ragged for 45 minutes and exhaust them, and then look to hit them second half. The problem with that is that City haven't scored a goal after 55 minutes, I think it is, for 10 games. And there's a massive question about City's legs. And I thought they looked tired at Anfield. They just looked that little bit, lacking that little bit of sharpness. But I it's not over. I mean, it'd be ludicrous to think it's over. I can see it being a nightmarish game. I'm going, and I'm expecting to lose my head massively around 55 minutes. And I think that, but I think, you know, we should just about have enough by hook or by crook. But the main thing we're looking for is, the main reason why I'll be excited about Liverpool scoring the first goal is it'll make me think we've got the opportunity of scoring our second. Okay. And I think that's the way we've got to look at it. But I'm confident of going through. We're 3-0 up, but this is a brilliant football team and they can kill you in 20 minutes.
No, I think it'll be 4-2 City, and I think Liverpool will go through. Neil, listen, we will get you on the pod either next week or the week after once we know who you'll be. Sorry, it's a slip there. If you do go through, who you get in the next round. We'll get you on to talk about that. Cheers for coming on, man.
Thank you very much indeed, gentlemen.
Cheers, mate.
We'll
be Take care, mate. Who do you think will go through? How do you guys
listen? It's going to be very difficult, isn't it? If we'd just got an away goal,
I think so.
That would have kind of just said we've got a bit of a chance. Clearly, I would love City to go through. I disagree again, not for the first time on this show with Neil. I think City will approach it differently. I think they will go hell for leather first
from
half
from the get go. Just get that early goal.
Just all the things that we've done brilliantly this season. Do all of that. Times 10.
Okay.
I would imagine.
Even if the back door and you
well,
end up just
but
go
that's
for
it. How they just go. Let's Sorry. Get an early goal. Let's play this scenario. We get an early goal. Mm-hmm. We get another one before half time, and suddenly you think you've got a game on back here. And yeah, look, if they score, then it is clearly game over. But if we can just get that early goal, and then who knows, an early one the second half, and then that is going to be some game, isn't it? But listen, it's going to be very, very difficult. They are firm favourites, Liverpool. And they played well in that first. They did it all at Anfield, didn't they? And they deserve to be ahead. Just shame we didn't get that away goal.
Just briefly, Josh, how do you see the game going?
I think City will come out and try and just blitz them. I think that
is that right, or do you think they should?
I think that's what they should do.
First 15 minutes.
No.
Minute one. Let's put it on them.
I think if City score within the first 5 minutes, what do you think the Liverpool players are going to feel like? They're going to think, there we go again. I just feel like, you know, when you have a boxing match and like two boxers match up well against each other, it's like, I feel like the way Liverpool play is perfectly suited to playing against Manchester City.
Okay.
And even that 5-0 loss that they had at the Etihad, I feel like the first 10 minutes of that game, Liverpool should have been 2-0 up and they got a man sent off. And I think they kind of just lost belief once they had a man sent off and a couple of goals went in. But I feel like the way Liverpool play, the way they press in the midfield, the way they don't give City time on the ball, is very well suited to playing against a team which wants to dominate possession. And the thing about dominating possession is that the longer you have the ball, the more chance you're going to have when you lose the ball and the transition happens, the more chances that you like somebody's going to be out of position.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where Liverpool really, really excel, because their transition is super fast. They're actually killer at that. So I feel like that's probably one of the reasons why Klopp has like a head-to-head match against Pep is pretty good.
Yeah.
Because their styles match up against each other in favour of Klopp.
Okay. Before we get to the Champions League, guys, I want to have a very brief chat about atmospheres at grounds and who the onus is on in terms of generating the energy and the passion in a game. So I want to talk just very briefly. This kind of was triggered when I watched the Arsenal-Stoke game Sunday before last. It was shocking. I mean, the atmosphere at the Emirates is well known for being really, really poor, really bad. But I think even by our standards, it was really dead. There was no one singing pre-match. I heard on TV, there was no one singing during the game. The first time I heard any Arsenal fans singing was when I think we had a good chance in the 30 minutes. Liverpool, conversely, as I mentioned earlier on, have that atmosphere. They know and they get their teams going. I want to know, I'll start with you, Nigel. Who is the onus on to generate that vibe? Is the onus on the fans who are coming to, from minute one, sing, chant, be up for it, make noise and support their team? Or is the onus on the players to actually perform, do something to get the fans going?
Well, I think to answer your question,
and don't say it's a bit of both.
No. I was going to say, to answer your question directly, which is where I was going to start.
Okay.
I would come on the side of the fans to create an atmosphere and a noise in the stadium. The fans are the only ones who are going to do that. Yes, of course, it will be affected by the way their team play. You get an early goal. You're playing your closest rivals. All these things are factors. And it's interesting. I suppose I'm thinking of I'm fortunate enough to travel home and away with City, and I'm thinking of a couple of grounds this season. I would say that Stoke City is one. I don't know whether it's just the way the Britannia Stadium is built or what, but they do generate some noise at that stadium. I think Huddersfield is another one as well. So, you know, I don't know whether you've been to Huddersfield Town's new ground. But it
was
is
that another slight dig?
Yeah. No, surely.
Okay, you got it.
Another one. How many is that? Is that two or three?
We'll get up to 10, maybe.
You're keeping count. But, you know, how do they really generate some noise? And then there's the places like Arsenal, as you say, which just has, the library has absolutely no atmosphere whatsoever. And so there's one or two others like that. So it is...
It's not coming on the fans to bring the noise.
If I've got to go, of course, it's a bit of both, which I'm not allowed to say. But to answer your question directly, yes, I think it is, for the fans, it is their responsibility. I think there's all sorts of things about standing and seating and all that stuff, which we'll get onto, I guess, on another show, which I think is a critical factor. But, yeah, to answer your question, fans.
I tend to disagree. I tend to feel like that if I'm a fan, I've paid my money, I've come to the game, I'm up for being entertained and I'm up for making noise and cheering, but it's for you guys on the pitch to do your job and perform, not even win, but perform and give me a reason to want to be invigorated and excited.
Can I just come back to you then, all right then? So we were talking to Neil earlier on about the whole sort of City-Liverpool first leg at Anfield. City were on top for the first 9 minutes, but the noise you had from those Liverpool fans, that wasn't coming from the performance on the pitch. That was those fans that decided to come there and support their team and make it an intimidating atmosphere. And they did. Inside the ground, they were fantastic. And they do that, you know, you'll never walk alone and that stuff. Celtic are similar as well, aren't they, in terms of their anthem. So there are certain grounds you can think about where fans create that atmosphere. And Liverpool's absolutely one of them.
But Selhurst Park is a ground that's known for having the ultras and creating a very good vibe. They're crap.
So I'm not sure. But I go to Crystal Palace regularly. I'm not sure. I don't have them in the same category. Okay. I think it's kind of a bit more orchestrated, and
they have a section, but that's about
a section which is far away from. We're stuck in a corner, of course, at Crystal. It's the worst ground in the world. But I don't think it's the same as what you hear at some of the others I've mentioned.
Josh, what side do you kind of err on?
It's a difficult one because, as a United fan, we've gone through this transition into being 3 or 4 years of like turgid football at Old Trafford. Mm-hmm. And so when you get into that situation, going to the ground and watching football which doesn't entertain you for 3 or 4 years can become a pain. and so then it becomes... First and foremost, I'm going to say it's down to the fans. Mm-hmm. The fans need to create that atmosphere. That's their job. They're supposed to be the 12th man. They're there to support the team. Mm-hmm. There's nothing more. Like, I've played in a stadium before, not like a massive stadium. Mm. And when you hear like some of your fans making noise, like you're not going to walk back when you've got to track that person back in midfield. You're going to start running. So making sure that the fans are on top, creating that intimidating atmosphere for the opposition. Is important. I had like quite a lot of players say things like, you know, they go to certain stadiums and they can't even hear their teammates on the pitch. You know, that's intimidating for them. What I will say is that if there's a level of expectation of performance and that goes on for a number of times, like Arsenal's an example, right? Arsenal fans are not happy with their team over a number of years, and they've been let down and let down over a number of years. So then fans go into the stadium. No, some of them are not even turning up, right? So at that stage,
what do you expect?
I think it's a bit unfair when a player comes out and says, get behind the team, or a manager says, get behind the team. Jose's been on this note, get behind the team, create an intimidating atmosphere. But you're not playing to attack, right? You're playing
give
football that we don't want to see.
Yeah.
We're not in agreement with the way that you're setting up the team. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes I'm not going to make noise.
Mm.
And one of the things as well is the first 5 to 10 minutes of a game is very important for some clubs. Like when I go to Old Trafford, depending on how the first 5 to 10 minutes start, the way the team start is how the crowd are going to react. Before the game kicks off, the Stretford End is always loud. It's always very loud, not the rest of the stadium, but mainly the Stretford End is very, very loud. They get into it, they sing the songs, they create an atmosphere. When the team starts, if they are passing the ball around the back, not really trying to play attacking football, if they're playing at a slow tempo, the crowd dies down,
goes flat.
The crowd gets flat. So I feel like, and then that sets the tone for the rest of the game. And then you had these games like, remember in the LVG years, you wouldn't even score a goal in 45 minutes. So you've got half time, it's 0-0. And you know, you're speaking with the fans that, you know, like when you're going to get a crisp or a drink or something, mm-hmm. and they're like, yeah, this is boring.
This is dead. Mm.
And so they've kind of killed the fans' atmosphere. It's very hard to go to a full stadium and chant for 90 minutes watching boring football.
We will come back to this another time, because I think with the West Brom rejection of their standing, I think that does play a role. Mm-hmm. I know West Ham fans are really pissed off about, not in the structure, but apparently they there's meant to be an area where they can stand, but they can't. And there's all kinds of details
we
there.
We have that Old Trafford as well.
Really. So, and I think Arsenal are campaigning, the clubs anyway, to try and get a section at the Emirates to stand. We'll come back to that another time. Okay, now let's have our Italian football roundup with our Italian football journalist expert, Gabriele Fasan. Gabriele, ciao, come stai?
Bene, tutto okay.
Va
thank
bene.
You.
Va bene. Okay, so let's get into it now, Gabriele. The first thing I wanted to ask you about is we had a very sad passing, a death here this week in football with Ray Wilkins. He passed away this week. Ray Wilkins obviously had a very successful time in Italy playing for Milan. What was the reaction to the news of his death in Italy?
Oh, very unhappy, because Wilkins was a very good player in Milan, and we have good memories of him, and I think he was a very clear player, very very good, and so we have a very good memory of Wilkins.
Okay, it's very very sad. Tell me about this Iranian television station who censored the Roman badge during the Barcelona Roma game. What happened there?
It was very very strange situation, Jordan, because Iranian TV censored the AS Roma logo, and because we have the wolf with the breast of the wolf, they obscured the our logo. And I think in Italy we have a surprise, because it's very very strange for us. But I think it was an internet viral.
Yes,
because we have irony. I mean, and so in this way, I think it's the better way to answer a similar situation. The AS Roma with the social media manager said that they are thinking about a new channel in Twitter in Persian in Iran. So I think they open in the future.
Okay, well we will see. We'll see if they do it again for the second game between Roma and Barcelona. Let's talk about the first game, the first leg between Roma and Barcelona. Gabriele, I've seen Barcelona play maybe 10 to 15 times this season. And when I've seen them play, they have been more efficient than brilliant. And they won 4-1. Were Roma unlucky, or were Barcelona very, very, very good?
I think it's it was an unlucky match for AS Roma, but I think in these matches in Champions League, the difference is the details. And I think Barcelona is stronger than Roma, sure. But if you consider the referee decisions in two cases of penalty for Roma, for in Dzeko and Luca and Lorenzo Pellegrini, two penalty, maybe I don't know if it would change the match. But I think the referee was important in the result. But I think Barcelona is stronger than Roma. Roma was not so good in the match because they were wrong in a few in the actions and in the play, and so I think 4-1 it's a too big result, but Barcelona is stronger than Roma. I think 2-1 or 2-0, for example, maybe
it's realistic, it was, it's manageable. Yes,
I think so.
And how do you expect Roma to deal with the second game? Do you think they will be, okay, the tie is probably over, let's just keep it minimal, not get humiliated? Or do you think they will go for it and they will try and be open, attacking, and try and get back into this tie?
Well, I think it's quite unrealistic to win the match and to qualify to semifinals. But I think AS Roma have to try because Barcelona in the first game in the first match was in a part of the match in some difficult. So I think Roma have to try, but it's I think it's impossible. But I think AS Roma have to try because Stadio Olimpico will plenty of supporters, and so I think you must try.
of course. And just finally, Gabriele, Juventus against Madrid. Madrid won the game at Juventus 3-0. What were the failings of that game down to Allegri, or were Madrid just fantastic and they were just too good?
I think Cristiano Ronaldo was fantastic, and I think I think it's enough. But Juventus played not so well, but was an acceptable match. I think the Juventus fans are sad, but not so much, because I think a realistic result maybe was 2-0 or 1-0. It depends. I think Cristiano scored in that way. So I think you see the Juventus Stadium was enthusiastic because Cristiano scored in that way. So I think this is football.
just briefly, Gabriele, is that something very common and usual for Italian fans? If they see something fantastic, if they see a great goal, they will applaud the opposition? Or was this very rare and unusual?
No, I think it's rare, but I think when a champion like Cristiano Ronaldo or Messi, maybe on Tuesday with AS Roma, score that way, I think the fans are the first thing is love football. So in that way, I think it should be a normal situation. And for example, like when we saw play Totti, for example, in the last season, every stadium in Italy were very enthusiastic. The Totti is in the field. Okay. I mean, so I think it's the most important value of football.
They're very, very complimentary of players who are very, very good and respectful. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. I like that. For now, thank you very much, Gabriele.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Let's now finally talk about Champions League, guys. And to do so, I'm going to bring in Spanish football journalist, Ben Hayward. Ben, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm good, Jordan. Thanks. How about you?
I'm very well, mate. Very well. You're in the room with a Man United fan, Josh, and Manchester City fan, Nigel. So let's, before I get the guys' general views on the Champions League, I want to hear what's happening from the Spanish quarters, from the two teams involved in the Champions League still. Ronaldo, how has the goal that he scored against Juventus in the first leg been received in Spain? Is it going one of the greatest Champions League goals? Is it one of even his one of his best goals? How has it been received back in Spain?
Yeah, I mean, he himself came out after the match and said in an interview with Real Madrid that, you know, with the club channel, that he thought it's one of his best goals, maybe even his best goal. Zidane, of course, said after the game, you know, he was asked if it was the best Champions League goal or the best goal that he'd seen. And he said, you know, it was a wonderful goal. And, you know, we all saw his reaction, of course, after the goal.
Did he say mine was better?
But he said mine was better. Yeah. a little bit tongue in cheek, you know, with a bit of humour, because, you know, he may genuinely believe that it was a wonderful goal as well. His, of course, back in the 2002 final. You know, it's been received with a lot of hype. That was a fantastic goal, wasn't it? I don't know. You know, everyone has their opinions over whether it was the best or whether it was even Ronaldo's best. But to produce it like that, I suppose, against Buffon, and, you know, jumping like 2.25 meters or 2.27 or whatever it was in the air, you know, quite an incredible feat, really.
Ben, do Ronaldo's great goals, this is going to be a weird question, but do his great goals even resonate anymore? Because they just seem to be so, you know, they seem to be so regular. Is there a big fuss made over when he scores great goals anymore? Because he scores them so frequently now, or is there still like a no? When he scores a banger, it's appreciated in the way that it should be.
Yeah, I think it's appreciated. I think a lot of it was Ronaldo and also Messi. Is that, as you say, you know, they score so many and so many great goals that, you know, sometimes we take it a little bit for granted. It's just become the norm, you know, with those two. But Ronaldo does get accused a lot, particularly by Barcelona fans and on social media, of scoring lots of tap-ins and penalties. You know, that goal against Juventus in Turin shows that, you know, he can produce wonderful goals as well. And we've seen it over the years. He's got quite a showreel of goals now.
He does indeed. How do you, or what approach do you expect Real to take in the second leg? They've got a 3-0 lead. Do you expect them to try and get one goal and just kind of dead it, really? Or do you think they'll just, you come on to us and we'll try and counter you?
Well, I don't think they have to do really too much different. You know, it's a lovely position to be in, isn't it? A 3-0 lead. Let's remember last season in the semi-finals, they beat Atletico 3-0 at home. And then they went away to Atletico and they conceded twice. And they're on the ropes a little bit. You know, the Calderon was rocking. But, you know, this is different. They won 3-0 this year away from home. You know, coming back to the Bernabeu, where, you know, they always score at home, it's going to be very, very difficult. I don't think Real Madrid need to do anything different. They can, soak it up and play on the counter with the attacking, you know, the pace of guys like Asensio, Gareth Bale. And, you know, I can't see them not scoring, to be honest. So I think it's going to be a very tough night for Juve.
Let's talk about Barcelona now. Are Barcelona, are their performances on par with the results they've had this season? Because whenever I've seen them play this season, they've been good without being great. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair, actually. Jordan, you know, they've become, I suppose, a little bit more pragmatic under Valverde. They've relied a lot on Messi. Defensively, they've been very good and they're very much built on firm foundations. I think there's a feeling that they might just be kind of crawling over the line. You know, at the end of the season now, they're looking a little bit tired. The last two performances haven't been the best. Obviously, Roma last week, I was at the game. 4-1 doesn't really reflect what we saw on the pitch that night. There was a couple of own goals there. I thought Roma were very good, and, you know, obviously the tie is pretty much over now. But I think against Real Madrid or against Bayern Munich or against Liverpool or City, let's not rule out City just yet, you know, they're going to be
you're getting the thumbs up
tested.
Here from Nigel.
They're going to be severely tested, Barcelona. We're going to really see what they're made of.
Just finally, Ben, let's go to the Europa League. Atletico, are they playing effectively now a B team in the league to focus on winning the Europa League, or are they still, because the title race is over pretty much, are they still, you know, putting out relatively strong teams in the league?
Well, you know, that's interesting. 2 points on that, Jordan. First of all, when they sold Gaetan and Carrasco to China at the beginning of, the end of February, it left them with 17 outfield players. So there's no way that Atletico, even if they wanted to, they can't field a B team.
Okay.
They're not able to do it. But, you know, Simeone, and I was lucky enough to do a series of interviews with him a couple of years ago, and I remember asking him, because remember that first Champions League final against Real Madrid? They won La Liga just a few days before, and they were playing the same 11 pretty much as they were fighting to win La Liga and also progressing in the Champions League. And I said to him, you know, was that not counterproductive? And he said that he prefers to have the players playing every 3 days, competing, and to have them at that high competitive level every 3 or 4 days. He'd rather do that than rest players, which is not something you hear that often.
No.
That's going to be what they have to do. But, you know, in La Liga, they're pretty much guaranteed that they are guaranteed a top four finish. They might slip down to third or even fourth with Valencia there. But the Europa League is going to be their focus now, because Barcelona aren't going to slip up in La Liga.
Ben, cheers, pal.
Thanks a lot, Jordan.
Thanks, mate. Take it easy. Guys, Champions League, start with you, Nigel. With Pep Guardiola, will it be? He was clearly brought in, well, in my view, his remit was to win the Champions League. If he doesn't, is there now serious pressure on him doing that next year?
Well, of course. I think that it's been well documented that the investment that's come into the club and the development of the brand, as they call it, I hate it, but you know what I'm talking about, is that the ultimate prize is to win the Champions League. It's the one trophy that's eluded us. As I said earlier, we're going to win the league 3 times in 7 years, which is not bad. We've won a couple of FA Cups along the way, a couple of League Cups. So, you know, it hasn't been
it's
a bad time.
Yeah.
But now is the time. We won the European Cup Winners' Cup in 1970, I remember, giving my age away here.
Such a lot.
There you go. It's true. We did. Absolutely, we do need to win the Premier League. And
the Champions League.
I beg your pardon. They're quite right, the Champions League. Mm-hmm. So that is something that has eluded us.
And as fans, sorry to cut you, as fans, next year, assuming you go out this week or tomorrow, will the pressure be on him to say, listen, we've won Premier Leagues before, we brought you in to take us to that next level? Not even a semi-final is not great. Will there be pressure from the fans?
Well, let's be clear. We're not out. You made the point. We're not out of the Champions League yet. If we don't win it next year, however, if, say, we've won a domestic cup and we've walked the Premier League and we're playing the sort of football, I think there'll be less pressure. If we don't win a trophy and we come second or third in the Premier and don't win the Champions League, then yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is about, and the owners are very clear, they want us to play exciting, exhilarating football. And, of course, win the Champions League.
Yeah.
Of course, there's going to be increased pressure. I don't think Pep's going to go. There's been all sorts of talk. We've lost 2 or 3 games on the trot. We could lose again midweek. We could lose to Spurs at Wembley at the weekend in the league. And suddenly, you know, it's all gone ratchet. I don't think that's going to be the view. We're going to end up winning the Carabao Cup, winning the Premier League, potentially progressing again, as I said, in the Champions League. So let's wait and see. I think Pep's there for the long haul. I think the owners will look after him. We've certainly got the resources to be able to do that. Pressure's on. But when you've got the best manager on the planet, you've got probably got the best squad, of course you're going to have that pressure. Bring it on.
Do you feel this would be an opportunity missed, though, for Pep and this City team, considering the other European giants? None of them are amazing this year, and you've got to think that one of those Barca, Bayern, Reals next year, maybe United, one of those teams will be the team to be.
Not United. Be sensible now. Come on, be sensible now. It was all going so well until just right the last
The European elites there, the Bayerns, the Barcas, the Reals.
And United.
And the Paris.
As the only fan here who's a Champions League winner. Calm down, guys. Calm down. You know my view on Pep and you know, pressure to win certain trophies. I mean, I've no doubt in my mind that there was a three-year plan, and at the end of the 3 years, they would have wanted Pep to win the Champions League.
Mm.
Right. However, I don't think that City... Well, I'm going to say, I don't think that City fans can really be disappointed if they win the league this season by, what, how many points they're going to win
it,
and do that again next season and don't win the Champions League. I don't think you can be disappointed. I think from what Pep's done, he's come in and he's elevated them to... People are talking about maybe they play the best football in the world. I don't necessarily think they do, but they're not far off.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like sometimes there is this whole thing like you have to win this competition. I think it'll be disappointing if he doesn't win it.
Disappointing or a failure? After 3 years, no Champions League.
I don't think it's a failure to not win the Champions League after 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, Alex Ferguson was at Manchester United. He went through 3 year spells without winning the Champions League.
Mm.
I think there's only a handful of managers on the planet who have won multiple Champions Leagues, even three. Mm. Pep's one of them who's won multiple Champions Leagues.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like sometimes, and also you have to understand where you came from. You know, City, when Pep took over, yes, they've won Premier Leagues before, but they've never really progressed or looked like a team who was going to win the Champions League. This is the first season where I've watched City and thought, they could actually do this.
Mm.
And, you know, they just, in my opinion, came up against a team who, if there was one team in the competition that City probably shouldn't have come up against,
it was
going to be Liverpool. Mm. Because the way Liverpool play is just not suited to playing against City.
It's only half time.
Yeah.
This is true.
Yeah, it's true.
Just broadening it out now, just wrapping up, guys. Bayern Munich, I know that you're a guy that thinks that a lot of people haven't given Bayern Munich the attention that you think they deserve. Why is that? Why do you think Bayern... Do you think Bayern will win the Champions League?
They're still my favourites to win it.
And why?
They're my favourites to win it. I think I said last week on the pod, you know, I think they just have balance all throughout the team.
Mm-hmm.
They have a solid defense. They have a great goalkeeper. They have a brilliant midfield and a brilliant attack. I mean, they have probably the best striker in the Champions League, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
The most complete centre forward. And I feel like they're very underestimated. I feel like their manager as well. He won the treble with them, and he's got them playing a similar brand of football.
Yeah.
The only thing that probably this week's round of games made me think was watching Real Madrid versus Juventus, because they just look again like the team that has Champions League written all over them. Mm. I don't think they're the best team, but you know, Ronaldo's in phenomenal form just in the last two or three mm-hmm. months, and when you've got a player like that in your side,
you've got a match.
They could win it.
What's your, just briefly, your dream final? If we assume all eight teams are still in it now, who would be your personal dream final?
I would like to see Bayern Munich versus Real Madrid. I don't want to see Liverpool in the Champions League final because they'll probably win it. I would have said Barcelona, but nah. I want to see Bayern Munich versus Real Madrid. I think that would be a great matchup.
And final point, Nigel. Should it be a concern that three of the four quarterfinals were won by a three goal margin? At this stage in the competition, should we be seeing 3-0s, 4-1s at this latter? These are meant to be the top eight teams in Europe.
Exactly. I don't think there's a pattern. I don't think you can necessarily read anything into that. For me, to answer your question, which I'm not sure if you're going to ask me or not, I'm going Bayern Munich against Manchester City in the final.
That's your dream final.
That's my dream final.
Okay, I like it. Love it. Gentlemen, thanks for coming on the FFP once again, Nigel and Joshua. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, Football Fans Podcast. We are on iTunes and Spotify. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or on Twitter, FFP_11. Until next week, peace.